The life of an order member. I'm not going to talk directly about my own experience or my own life as an order member particularly, because I'm not sure that it's... Well, I mean, I'll sort of explain why later. But obviously the views I'll be expressing have come from somewhere. So we'll see. They've come from my own experience. I want to start off where some of where Sadaloka left off yesterday. So, you know, before we get to the life of an order member, you know, we're on our way to becoming order members, some of us. Some of us need to try and carry on maintaining our, what should we say, our status or our position as order members. But what I want to underline, I'm not sure, I can't remember whether Sadaloka mentioned this or not, but one of the things that we particularly look for, or I certainly look for in somebody who's getting close to ordination, is whether or not they're aware of the fact that they need supportive conditions to maintain their practice. And I think this is vitally important, because if you don't have that awareness, once you get past ordination, you'll come to grief. I'll say more about that later on, why exactly one comes to grief. I've got quite a lot to say about coming to grief, but we'll see. And I also want to talk about Sadaloka closed with saying that the ordination is not the end of your spiritual life, it's the beginning. Yeah, getting ordained is not like doing a university degree at the end of which you get a bit of paper. Yeah, it's not like gaining a black belt in judo or karate. There's this phenomenon that I call the black belt syndrome. I've met so many men who've told me they've got a black belt in whatever it is, but they look as though they gave up training years ago, and all they use their black belt for now is to keep up their pyjama trousers, basically. That's how, and there are so many of them, yeah? And I think it's this business of, okay, got the black belt, flop. Yeah, collapse, don't do anything, don't carry on training, don't do anything at all. And if you do that with ordination, you will come to grief. Yeah, you will have a painful and difficult time. So don't think in terms of ordination. Don't think in terms of ordination. Think in terms of maintaining effective going for refuge, because that's what you've got to do. You've got to maintain effective going for refuge. And really remember what that means. Yeah, really remember what that means. It means, among other things, that you're trying to maintain a personal standard. And it's a personal standard that you've declared at your ordination. Yeah, in effect, what you're saying when you get ordained to yourself and, I suppose, to the rest of the order is, I will attempt to maintain effective going for refuge. That's what you're saying. I'm going to keep it up. That's what you're saying. It's as if you scribe a line or a mark in your personal standards, in everything about your life, really, and you say, I will keep up to this mark. I will not fall below this mark. No matter what happens, I will not fall below this mark. So what keeps us up to the mark? Yeah, what keeps us up to the mark? It's our practices. Yeah, our practices keep us up to the mark. But I'll say more about those later. If we're to keep up to the mark, we have to establish as quickly as possible a sustainable level of practice that we can maintain for the rest of our lives. Again, that's what we're saying at ordination. It's not something that we're, you know, it's not like the university degree. It's not like the black belt, you get it and then you collapse. You're saying that you're going to keep to this mark for the rest of your life. So you need to think about this very seriously. Yeah, it's a serious business. I mean, there's also, you know, there's lots of fun and joy and, you know, satisfaction and all the rest of it, but it is serious and you need to address it seriously. Yeah. Both Padmavajra and Sadaloka indicated that going for refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha is a continuous process. Yeah, it's a continual unfolding. Or it's no going for refuge at all, yeah? It's just the black belt again, the black belt syndrome. It's just using your kesa to keep your pyjamas up, yeah, basically, if you're not careful. And that's useless. It's useless to you and it's useless to the world. Not that we won't have difficult times when we struggle. even to keep ourselves sane and reasonably human. We have to remember that there are no guarantees, in the spiritual life. Getting ordained is not promotion. Yeah, you are not being promoted to officer status. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you're going to get a bowl of muesli every day when you get to 65. Yeah, you can't rely on that, or that people are going to be nice to you and civil to you for the rest of your days as an order member. You can't rely on that, or that you're going to get some sort of fat or thin pension for all the work that you've put into the movement over the years. Yeah, that's not guaranteed. That's not up for offer. Yeah. You're doing all this for nothing, in a sense, yeah? Absolutely nothing. When we get ordained, to sort of change the analogy, it's as if we sign a blank check, yeah? We don't know how much this is going to cost us. It's completely open. Absolutely anything can happen, and it probably will happen, yeah? And it's not anybody's fault but mine or yours or each of us individually, yeah? We ask for it, that's the action. It has consequences, and we have to be prepared to take full responsibility for the consequences of that action. Yeah? Nobody else. Don't let me hear you say in 10, 15, 20 years' time, oh, you know, it was X's fault, or the order members at Centre Y, or the movement, or the order for all the things that have happened to me. Yeah? You can't say that. It's your responsibility, and you have to really, again, think this through seriously. Because you hear it. I hear it from the mouths of, you know, sort of jaded older members. Oh, yeah, if only they hadn't worked me over in such and such a centre, you know, I'd have been all right. No. You've just got to spring back. It doesn't matter what happens to you. It's your responsibility to keep going. You asked for it, you got it. One of the things you might get is being worked over by the other older members at your centre. It's happened to me in my time, and somehow I survived. Yeah, so be prepared for anything. As I say, sometimes you'll hear older members saying this sort of stuff, but actually, I mean, I think it's an absurd and thoughtless position to adopt. Yeah, they've stopped thinking, and they've stopped thinking about what it is they're doing and why they wanted to do it, and forgotten it, I suppose. It's strange business. Padmavajra distinguished between the ideal and the real order, real in with a small r, yeah? The order can be a living network of spiritual friendships, yeah? It can be a vast supercosmic experiment. It can be a great adventure. It's a mess in progress. It's a mess full of messes in progress, yeah? Order members at their best and at their worst, you know, things go up and down. It can be a spiritual community. But this side of stream entry, Kalyanamitrata, practice generally waxes and wanes. And again, you mustn't forget that. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you've done it when you get your kesa. You haven't really done anything except dive off the diving board. And quite what you land in really remains to be seen. You really can't say what somebody's going to land in. We have to keep remembering what it is we're trying to do and why we wanted to do it in the first place. We'll probably all find ourselves at some time or another in our spiritual career. I know I have, in Avalokiteshvara's position in that reading the other day that whoever it was read, from time to time thinking, what's the point? This is useless. I'm getting nowhere. I'm having no effect. Yeah, you will experience that. I'm almost sure you will experience that at some point in your spiritual life. One antidote for me is to keep remembering what the word spiritual means. Yeah? I find this an incredible sort of inspiration. It keeps me in perspective and it reminds me of what it is I'm trying to do. And there are various references for it, but it's in the latest sort of publication. So I'll read you just a little bit of it, because I think it's very important. We use this word spiritual all the time and we forget what it means. And you'll hear other people using this. Yeah, you go on YouTube and you see all these charismatic or not so charismatic teachers talking about spiritual. And it's not clear what they're saying, but Bhante is extremely clear about what he means by spiritual. And as I say, I think this is vitally important. So he says, page 295 in the Essential Sangha Rakshita. In my own usage, standardized over many years, the word spiritual has two meanings, one narrower than the other. In its narrower sense, spiritual corresponds to the Buddhist term kusala, literally skillful, sometimes translated as wholesome, which means characterized by the mental states of freedom from craving, freedom from aversion, and freedom from delusion, or more positively, by contentment, non-erotic love, and wisdom. Thus, a spiritual life is a life devoted to the cultivation of such states. So it's absolutely specific. He's being completely specific here. Yeah, a spiritual practice is one that conduces to their development, and a spiritual teaching, one that is concerned with them, either theoretically or practically or both. So that's his narrower sense. Yeah, and I challenge you to find this in some of the waffle that you'll find on YouTube. Yeah, where people are talking about the spiritual. To be honest, I can't see the attraction. Okay, in its broader sense, Banti says, spiritual corresponds in my personal usage not only to the term kusala, but also to the still more important term lokutara, literally the beyond world, or as we may say, the transcendental or nirvanic. When the word spiritual is taken in this broader sense, the spiritual life is one that is devoted not only to the cultivation of skillful mental states, but also to the attainment of the transcendental or nirvanic state. For Buddhism, it is axiomatic that there is no attainment of the transcendental or nirvanic state except on the basis of a mind dominated by the skillful mental states of freedom from craving, freedom from aversion, and freedom from delusion. And I think if you learnt that off by heart, if you learnt nothing else, that would keep you in perspective, yeah? That would stop you from losing your way and remind you of what it is you said you were doing when you got ordained. I come back to this again and again and again. It's magnificent, I think. It's worth noting that in Banti's vision of how the order could be and what it's really like, Banti rarely uses the words should and ought, which can cause knee-jerk reactions. He's much too skillful for that. He's given us loads of pointers as to how an order member should behave, the necessary factors that need to be included in a life to make it spiritual. Yeah? His work is a proliferation of guidelines for us. I'll maybe come back to this, yeah? But he states again and again that the order functions by inspiration and influence through the web of Kalyanamitrata and not by the exercise of power or authority or the issuing of orders. Yeah? And I know order members who've forgotten this, yeah? And they're looking to establish. They'd like to have some sort of power structure within the order, or at least get rid of everything and have it sort of democratic. Again, that doesn't fit in with this description. In principle, if we think about it, you can't make an order member do anything. Ethically speaking, you can't make anyone do anything without committing violence to them. This is what Banti says in the Ten Pillars when he's discussing the first precept. Banti describes violence as the doing to a person by whatever means, what they do not want us to do to them. Page 54 in the latest edition. Yeah, I take that very, very seriously. Yeah, because it's so easy to sort of fudge that and think that when you lean on people a bit emotionally or psychologically, you're not doing them violence. But that's not your test. Yeah, it's their test. How do they feel about this? Yeah, if they don't want you to do it to them, you're committing an act of violence. Yeah, and again, I think we lose sight of this over and over. And as I say, unfortunately, I see older members doing this to each other and to mitras and even beginners again and again and again. And it's a shame. Clearly, violence has no place in the order or the movement. But human beings are unintegrated, they're forgetful and they're devious. We're unintegrated, we're forgetful and we're devious, whether we've got a kesa or not. Yeah, whether we've got a kesa or not. till you're ordained, till you commit, you don't know what it is you're, what it's going to be like. Yeah, in a sense, it's impossible for me to tell you what the life of an order member is like, especially now. I mean, more than ever now. There are over, what is it, over 1,500 order members, yeah, with their own experience. Each of them has their own individual experience. They've all no doubt got their own stories to tell. I know they have, yeah. And you can't really generalise from like a handful of order members exactly what life in the order is, what the life of an order member will be. There's going to be radical differences between their experiences. It's interesting, quite recently Banty said that for some people, you've probably heard this, that the spiritual life is hard at the beginning but easy at the end. For some people it's easy at the beginning but hard at the end. For some people it's easy at the beginning and it's easy at the end. And for some people it's hard at the beginning and it's hard at the end. Yeah, it never gets easy. We really don't know how it's going to be. This is a serious business, and it needs to be thought through as thoroughly as possible. Getting ordained, committing to maintaining effective going for refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. And again, we have to keep adding that, yeah? Don't clip off and say, going for refuge. And especially like Padmavajra said, my GFR, yeah? What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. And then you have to keep unpacking Buddha, Dharma and Sangha to yourself, to remind yourself of what it is that you're doing. As soon as you get into this shorthand business, you're going to start forgetting what it is you're trying to do or what you said you were going to try and do. Yeah, you're taking on a job of work. Yeah, a full-time job. At least it's going to gobble up all the time that you're prepared to give it. Do you understand that? Yeah. Do you understand what you're letting yourself in for? That's why I'm sort of saying this, yeah? I mean, you may think it's all going to be a bed of roses, but you can't rely on that, yeah? It could be a bed of thorns and nettles, yeah? And you have to be prepared for that and take responsibility for that. For the rest of your life, doing this, yeah? Making it the central factor in your life around which everything else is arranged, around which everything else in your life is, at least theoretically, secondary. Yeah, is that what you want? Yeah, think it through. Be sure. Be clear. Because if it's not, and you decide that after you've ordained, you're going to make a fool of yourself. Yeah, even if it's only to yourself. Yeah, it's going to undermine your own sort of confidence, your own drive, and your own initiative. So really think carefully. In a way, I do want to frighten you, yeah? I want to convey the magnitude of the task, because in the long run, I think it will make it easier for you, yeah? In the long run, it will make it easier for you. These days, you're going to have a much better idea about what is entailed. When I got ordained 30-something years ago, I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I had a sort of vague idea, but it took me about 10 years to begin to understand the weight and seriousness of what I'd done. It took a long time because things weren't worked out like they are now. It was just a question of going for refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and committing yourself. So I thought, oh yeah, that's all right, kind of thing. And then, you know, then the next 10 years of life sort of broke over me, and I struggled to keep afloat. What am I going to do now? Right. Okay, another little sort of bugbear, if you like. Institutions, yeah? The life of an order member includes engagement with institutions. Institutions can be a bit of a dirty word, yeah? People don't like institutions. Sometimes you hear, I mean, I've heard order members and mitras say, oh, I like the order, you know, I'm really behind what the order stands for, but I don't like the FWBO, that's what we used to call it, yeah? I don't like the movement, yeah. And I think there are reasons why this is the case, yeah. But you have to remember what institutions are for. Institutions are to try and make sure that something happens. They're serving an end. They're not the goal. They're not to be ends in themselves, yeah? They serve the end. They serve the goal. So we should make sure that we run institutions and institutions don't run us. Or we don't allow other people to run us through an institution, because that can happen as well, yeah? They're there to maintain creativity, individuality, responsibility, yeah? And we have to remember that institutions don't exist outside of people. And 9 times out of 10, when I hear somebody say to me, "Oh, I don't like the movement. I've had a difficult time with the movement." What they mean is that they've had a difficult time with people in the movement. But it's, you know, you can sort of sidestep all that if you just say, "Oh, the movement." You know, what the movement is, people. You know, who are these people? What happened with them? What did they do? How did you respond? Yeah, there are facts there that we have to try and get to grips with. The institutions of the movement provide opportunities to develop the altruistic, yeah, a necessary and vital element of True Game for Refuge. They provide the structures through which order members and mitras can forget themselves. Yeah, and again, this is vitally important. We need, in the long run, to forget ourselves and stop being so self-centered. Yeah. In a way, this is also the secret of the mitra system. Yeah, it's to help people forget themselves. When you enter into the institutions of the movement, yeah, what they're trying to do is that, well, I suppose you're attempting to work together. That's what should happen. You're attempting to work with other people in the movement and cooperate with each other. Unpaid, yeah? Although some do try to turn this into a career and find ways of getting paid to do it. Over and above some sort of minimum wage or subsistence level, I think that's highly questionable. Maybe that would be something to talk about, yeah? Some people try to do that. We're not doing it for the financial remuneration. We may get supported enough, and that's all we need, yeah? So entering into the institutions of the movement takes great courage, patience, and forbearance, yeah? It takes a great deal of emotional maturity. We have to learn to cooperate. In a way, it's a thankless task, yeah? It's like a sort of spiritual assault course, I think, working in the institutions of the movement. And it brings, if you engage with it, with them, it brings this courageousness, yeah? It brings patience. It brings emotional maturity. It really is the spiritual, in the way that Banta uses it, front line, yeah? So, you know, again, I recommend that you engage with the institutions of the movement. That's the front line, yeah? That's where the real spiritual, in the way that Banta defines it, battle takes place. Needless to say, one will get bloodied, yeah? Or, to quote the film title, there will be blood, yeah? Expect there to be blood. And some of the time it's going to be yours, I'm afraid. The casualties in the movement and the order are many, yeah? You can see them, you can hear them talking about it, yeah? In, you know, to one form of, or to one level of positivity or another, yeah? I would venture to say, I would venture to say that if you can't survive or even thrive in the institutions of the movement, to some extent at least, yeah? Perhaps the spiritual life, the real spiritual life, is not for you. Yeah. So it's a way of finding out whether, you know, this is really the life you want. Yeah. Engage with the institutions of the movement and see what sort of feedback you get for and of yourself. I'm not driving any route of depression. now, what do I want to say that? Yeah. Okay. There's a sort of natural cycle of events in the life of an order member. And I think this takes anything from 3 to 5 to 10 years to get used to. Yeah. So again, you have to be careful. I mean, we tell people this when they get ordained, when you're at Gukyaloka or on your ordination retreat or whatever. You have to be careful what you take on, because there is a massive adjustment process to take, to sort of to take account of before you start doing all sorts of other things. It's easy when you get your caser to think that suddenly you're Superman and you're invincible, and to sort of rush out into the breach and start trying to sort of carve things up and sort things out all over the place. Be very careful of that, yeah? You don't know what you're doing yet, yeah? Keep a low profile. I would suggest keep a low profile and get into things very sort of carefully and slowly, yeah? Bear in mind that there is this 2, 3, 5 year cycle in an order member's life that you need to get used to. Before you know what the weight of your daily and weekly and yearly life is going to be like, yeah? There's a lot in it, and you end up doing a lot of things that maybe you haven't thought about. I mean, again, if you read all the stuff, it's in the material, but I know people sort of read things and go, yeah, and then they forget it. Very, very dangerous thing to do. So daily, meditation. Yeah, you won't get anywhere without some sort of meditation practice. You need to be able to reflect. Yeah, you need to be able to study. You need to be engaging with devotional practice, I think, on a daily basis. Yeah, weekly. I mean, that goes without saying. Yeah, I mean that's part of your training, isn't it? As a mitra, you're already sort of doing that stuff. So you're like the, I don't know if any of you have done martial arts, you're like the brown belt who's building up to black belt. They really go for it, you know, they push, yeah? So you've got to keep pushing after you get the kesa. Keep that up, yeah? So it's interesting, you know, people say, oh, you know, I don't seem to be getting on as well now that I'm ordained as I did when I was a mitra. And you ask them, okay, what are you doing on a daily basis? What did you do before you got ordained? Oh, yeah, I was meditating every day, I was studying every day, going to the centre, you know, helping out at classes, doing a bit of reflection, all the bits and pieces, seeing lots of friends. And then as soon as they get ordained, all that goes out the window. And then they wonder why they're floundering. Yeah? You've got to keep doing that stuff. It's already there, so don't stop doing it. Keep doing it, yeah, on a daily basis if you can. Then you're going to have chapter meetings. Once a week you're going to meet with your local chapter. Remember Banti's thing about an order member who isn't in a chapter is half an order member, but don't take it too literally. Is it the top half or the bottom half? We can ask ourselves. No, don't ask that question. Chapter meetings. Theoretically, you know, Banti would like them to be spiritual workshops where you're really getting to grips with each other. I mean, if you're already in a going for refuge group, that should be happening. So don't stop it when you get to become an order member. Yeah, you're going to a chapter. Make that like you're going for refuge group, to the extent that your going for refuge group was useful, efficient, and effective. Yeah, keep that up. Don't just do your own study. Try and apprentice yourself to somebody else who's leading study groups. Yeah, help somebody with their mitra study group every week. You'll learn loads from that. It's so good because you don't have to do anything except sit there and watch what they do and think about how you'll do it if and when you get to that point, yeah? And it's a brilliant thing to do, and you'll go through all the stuff you've already been through, but once is never enough. You need to go through the stuff you've been through in the mitra course and on the ordination process again and again and again. You've got to drive it into your bowels, yeah? Otherwise it will just go in one ear and out the other. Even if you do it 5 or 6 times, yeah? We forget. You've got to drive it into your being, yeah? Really drive it into your being. Class, yeah? Go to a public class as often as you can. As I say, beware of helping out too much from the word go. When you get back from Gukhyaloka, especially if you get back from Gukhyaloka, you come back shiny, and all the jaded old order members who've been keeping it up for years think, oh yeah, reinforcements, put him into the front line, yeah? Watch out for that. Say to them, yes, okay, I'll come and support you, but I don't want to lead it. Maybe I'll lead it once or twice if you're ill, yeah? But the rest of the time, I'm going to support you. You lead the class, yeah? So watch out for that one. Watch out for that one. But go to it, yeah? We have a duty to teach, even if it's only informally other people. But you won't be able to teach anybody anything unless you learn how to do that, yeah? You need to watch somebody who can do it, at least to a reasonable level of skill. You need to watch them doing it and learn what it is that they do. Think about how you're going to do it. What would you say when they make a mistake? What went wrong? What would you do? Yeah, how could you have made that better? I mean, it's all, in a way, it's sort of obvious, but you can learn this stuff. You can learn this stuff, but you won't learn it by sitting at home watching the telly, or do you know what I mean? You might think, oh, I've got my case, so I can do anything. It's not like that. It's not like that at all. Some people, you know, some people are good teachers. Some people will never be teachers in that formal kind of way. So again, you've got to work out where you stand in that sort of relation. You know, are you good at teaching? Are you good at giving talks? You know, and you can't really rely on your own experience. You have to hear what other people think of how you do it. You need feedback about that stuff. And you'll only get that if you put yourself into situations like beginning with starting to support somebody in a class. So don't fall back on that. And again, it represents the altruistic element. Yeah, you're giving something back. Yeah, you've got all sorts of stuff from the movement which you're probably only half aware of. So put something back in. Yeah, in a way, that's part of your duty as well, to put something back into the movement. You know, as recompense for everything that you've received. Order weekends, once a month, is it? It depends. I've sort of got out of sync with this a bit. National order weekends, how often are they? Once a quarter, is it? Or something like that. Go to them, yeah? Don't think about whether you feel like it or not. Feelings are like ferrets. You know, it's all very interesting to watch them running around, but they don't have any bearing on how to run a life, yeah? Forget your feelings. Go to all the weekends for other people, so that other people can see you. Never mind if you don't like it or you have a bad time. Learn how to have a good time on all the weekends. It's vital in a way. It's vital. There are regional order weekends and there are national order weekends. Even if you're not, you know, even if you're an introvert, you know, learn how to be on order weekends. It's vital. It's part of the Buddha's injunction to meet regularly and in large numbers. You don't even have to do anything in a sense. He doesn't say, oh, when you meet in large numbers, you know, and regularly, do this, this and this. He doesn't say that. He just says, meet regularly in large numbers. Just go there and you don't have to do anything. Just sit around and look at other people. Let them look at you. That's enough. That'll do, yeah? It will have quite a considerable effect on your life and other people's lives. So try and remember that, yeah? Once a month, order metta bhavana, yeah? You need to squeeze that on top of all the other stuff that you do. It's the metta bhavana using four order members. You can even do a sort of six-stage one where you include Bante as well. That's quite a nice thing to do because he's important. You could even squeeze in your public and private preceptors, yeah? If you want the full sort of set, yeah? That's the thing to do. Go to any large gatherings, yeah? Buddha Field, anything at all. I mean, we used to have these FWBO and WBO days, didn't we? Those sort of things. There are equivalents of those. Yeah, go to those. Once every 2 years, there's an order convention. Yeah, international or European. Yeah, go to those conventions. 500 plus order members. Learn how to be in that situation with large numbers of order members. And again, you don't have to do anything. I mean, they organise study groups and talks and all sorts of things you can do. You know, you can do yoga and dancing and lots of all other silly things, but you can go and do those and enjoy yourself, yeah, and just be there, yeah, and learn how to have a good time at those sorts of functions. And as I say, that takes about 3 to 5 years. You need to have done two international or order conventions before you really get a sense of, this is what the cycle of an order member's yearly life is like, and it includes this 2 year order convention. And you need to build all these things into your spiritual life. Don't get to the point where, you know, you've become so busy that there isn't actually time to go on the order convention, or I've used up all my leave or whatever it is, so I can't go on the order convention. That's just lack of mindfulness and lack of planning, yeah? And again, that's your responsibility. You're letting yourself down if you do that. Da-da-da-da-da. So that's the cycle of events. I've probably missed some out, but in a way, being in the order, Arloka calls being in the order a practice. Yeah, it's a practice being in the order. So it won't be a practice if you don't go to gatherings of order members. You're not doing the practice. Yeah, you have to go to these gatherings if it's going to be part of your practice, no matter what you feel like. You've got to get over your feelings, yeah? Get over your feelings. So, practice. There are different ways of looking at that. I mean, I've mentioned some of the sort of individual specific practices that we do. I'll just go through some of them again. Again, really, I don't need to do this because it's all in, you know, like the two sets of 15 points. It's just Banti banging on about what we ought to be doing, what we should be doing, or what we could do if we really wanted to get the most out of this, yeah, and remember why we got into it in the first place. So, you know, I'm sort of, I'm telling you what you already know, but make sure that you don't just know it from here up, yeah? You need to know it from here down. Right? Again, you've got to get it into your bowels. Good old bowels. There's another brain in the bowels, they say, yeah? So there's as many nerve endings down here as there are up here. So if you're, if you've only got it in your head, that's only half, that's half an alderman. If it's only in your head, you're half an alderman. You've got to get into the nerve endings, yeah, in your bowels. Oh God, what am I saying? Meditation, yeah? We must do meditation. It's the only way to come to know what our own minds are like, yeah? It's vital that we know what we're like, and that's, it's probably the best way to know intimately what we're like, what our little strengths and weaknesses, peccadilloes, habits, and all the rest of it are. And we only really do that through meditation. And I would say, I mean, again, maybe I'm sticking my neck out here, you're not going to get far with this business of knowing your own mind unless you do bhavana practices, yeah? I think if you decide very early on in your spiritual career that you're just going to do formless practice, You're just going to be left with accepting the surface of your mind, yeah, the froth on the top of your mind, and you're never going to get below it. You need to do bhavana practices. That will reveal what you're really like, yeah, all the little inconsistencies, all the little deviant behaviours and nasty little habits that we don't usually confront. You can learn to live and sit with those if you just do formless meditation, because there's nothing to do. But actually, there's a lot to do if you're going to make anything of your own being, yeah, and refine it, yeah, and develop it. And that's what we're supposed to be trying to do. Oh, God. Can I pull the plug out? study. Somewhere, Banti says, the purpose of study is to remind us of the Dharma. Yeah? It's as simple as that. If we don't study, we forget about the Dharma. We forget about the intricacies. We forget about how to put it across to other people. If we can't talk about the Dharma in terms of, you know, ideas and concepts, we're not going to be able to give anybody anything except, you know, it's like maybe a nice feeling. But as I said, there's plenty of that on the web. If you want nice feelings, you know, go on YouTube and look at some of these people. They'll give you a nice feeling, but I mean, it's what Banti calls the candy floss, yeah? It looks like there's a lot of it, but when you grab hold of it, you end up with a little ball of sugar, and you put it in your mouth, and it dissolves. There's nothing there. Devotion, puja. I know this is a difficult one for some people, yeah? Oh, dear. There's supposed to be a load of notes on the back, but there aren't any. devotion and puja. Now, I wonder if I put that down anywhere else. I might have done. Anyway, it's vital. Oh, yeah, it's vital. That's how you get to the bottom half of being an order member, yeah? You'll only stay half an order member if you don't engage with your emotional side, yeah? The emotions need to be involved. Again, if you don't involve the emotions, you're probably not going to have much drive and initiative and will to actually do all the things that you do like doing in the spiritual life. More and more, you've got to involve your emotions. I've remembered what I did with the quote now, but never mind. That'll do. Otherwise, I'll go on all night. Friendship. At the very least, we can learn to be friendly, no matter what we're feeling. Yeah? Our feelings about ourselves and in ourselves have got nothing to do with the way that we relate to other people. Yeah? We can respond to other people positively, no matter what we feel like. And we can learn how to do that. Ethics, I've already talked about that a bit. Practicing the precepts is vital. Hopefully, if I've still got any breath left, there'll be a reading about that tonight. Ethics is the base, yeah? Everything comes out of ethics. Everything is supported by ethics. It's the base of the threefold path, isn't it? Ethics, meditation, wisdom. If you don't apply yourself to ethics, you won't have meditation and you won't have wisdom. Practicing collectively, I've talked about that a bit. We have to learn how to survive in groups, yeah? Even in small groups, you know, even in sort of six or seven in a study group, we have to learn how to do that. Even if it's difficult, we can learn how to do that. We can learn to be effective in groups, not just in them, but effective in them. We can learn to be a positive influence on the groups that we're in so that we can see when it's going wrong and why it's going wrong and be able to sort of tip it so that we keep it in the positive and skillful. Yeah. Again, if we're in a group, that's part of our responsibility. Another little something I've taken on as a practice recently is, and this comes from Bhante saying a few years ago that he could find a dharmic message in anything that he read. Even if he read Mills and Boone, yeah, that's these love stories about doctors and nurses in hospitals, you know, how they fall in love with. Even that, he can find the dharmic message in. So I've been trying to do this, yeah. I've been trying to make sure that what I read and what I watch has some sort of dharmic message or connection. And I think about it until I find it, yeah. So whatever you watch or read, watch for that. If you can't find one pretty quickly, give it up. Yeah. If you're watching something over and over again, like, I mean, I've noticed there are these, you get these DVD sets, don't you, of The Wire and things like that, yeah? If you watch one or two of those and you can't find a dharmic connection, drop them, yeah? Get rid of them because they're just a waste of time. You could be doing better things with your time if you can't find a dharmic connection. What else? Shabda, I'm terrible at this. I do have my reasons, but I, you know, it's a long time since I reported into Shabda. Ideally, I should be reporting into Shabda every month. I confess I don't do that. And I'm trying to sort of do something about that. As I say, I have reasons and I have difficulties with it, but selfless service, yeah? Again, this is the altruistic aspect. Make sure that you're doing something that goes beyond yourself in whatever way. This is one of Banti's bits of advice to Padmavadra. It was one of the elements that will help you towards stream entry until you're a stream entrant, and then you can practice sort of automatically, as it were. Yeah. So make sure that there is this altruistic element. And again, this is a practice. Yeah, it's something you should be doing regularly. Going beyond yourself. Mentioned the Audemetta Bhavna. Art and literature, the best. Yeah, if you listen to Bhante, he says, there isn't time for anything but the best of this stuff. So you have to ask yourself, you know, okay, would it be better for me to read, I don't know, some Dickens or some Jane Austen, or to watch The Wire, yeah? Or Deadwood. I mean, I must admit, you know, I have watched Deadwood. For all sorts of personal reasons that are completely invalid. Yeah, I've stopped. I could have gone on to the second set, but I didn't. Yet. We'll see, yeah? Art and literature, yeah. He says there's only time for the best. Regular retreats, yeah? Don't find that you get to the end of a year and you haven't been on retreat. That's a, you know, you're asking for to run aground on the rocks if that's the case. Yeah, plan your retreats in for the year. Yeah, try and get a solitary retreat. I mean, it's so good to do a solitary retreat because you come back to yourself and your practice, and you have to find out again, why am I doing this? Why am I getting up in the morning early, sitting down, doing some chanting, and then trying to develop positive mental states and concentration? That will keep challenging you, and you have to keep asking yourself that kind of question. Regular retreats. Who is it? Somebody here. Maybe it was Sona. He used to say, you know, at the end of a good retreat, because you're all cranked up at the end of a good retreat, aren't you? He'd say, go into the office and book the next retreat now. Because in 2 weeks' time, you think, oh, no, I don't fancy it now. And we were having a discussion in our group about how, you know, you book the retreat and then with a week to go, you think, oh God, can I find a good excuse for not going, you know, because I don't feel like it, you know. Yeah, and you know that when you get there, after a couple of days of sort of itchy and, you know, jagged, you'll actually start to open again like a nice little, you know, beautiful flower. But you forget that, you know, you forget that feeling. And you're back to the, oh, I don't, you know, I want to keep it all as it is. I don't, you know, it's an upheaval. You know, I've got to get on a train and go up to Norfolk or wherever it is. Yeah, and it's a load of bother. Wouldn't it be easier just to sit at home? You'll miss out if you do that, yeah? Again, you'll meet with other people in the movement. They'll reflect you back to yourself. You'll get useful feedback about yourself and your own spiritual practice. Access to nature. Again, Banti seems to think this is highly, very, very, very important. If you live in a city, well, he's also said, hasn't he, that very often for some people these days, the only contact they get with nature is through sex, yeah? That's the only time they actually come into contact with anything like nature at large. Yeah? They don't even go to the park, for heaven's sake. Yeah. So find nature. Find nature. You can even find nature in darkest Essex. Yeah? There was a program on the telly the other week about nature in darkest Essex. What else? Discussing mitra and ordination requests. Yeah, this is a practice. Yeah, as soon as you get ordained, you'll be sitting in a chapter meeting, and they'll say, "Oh, so and so's asked to be a mitra." Yeah, and you'll be asked for your opinion about this. So you can't, you know, if week after week, year after year, you go, "I don't know him, I haven't met him," you know, kind of. If he becomes a mitra and then an order member, he may well join your chapter. Don't you want to know who this person is? You know, this person may be the future of the order. And you're saying, well, I don't know who he is. I don't see him. You know, well, go out and see him. Take the beep initiative, for heaven's sake. Yeah? Know who these people are. And, you know, we don't expect, you know, the rest of the people in your chapter won't expect loads of revelations about how you see deeply into their psyche and all the rest of it. You can learn from them. Just listen to how they talk about somebody, you know, and then tell them what your sort of impressions are. Make sure that you've got some impressions. So go out and get them. Yeah, go out and get impressions about this person. Feed them back and see what the more experienced people do with that, because they'll have angles on. Oh, well, maybe that means this. Or did you ask him about this? And you may have to go back and have another chat with, you know, prospective Mitra X to find out what's really going on with him. But you can learn from that, yeah? It can be learnt, and it's useful stuff. And it is part of your practice, it's part of your duty, yeah? Again, I hear that in some chapters people say, oh no, we're not discussing Mitras because that's not chapter business. It is chapter business. This person is going to become sooner or later an order member in your chapter. So it's your business. You need to know who this person is. So take the initiative. Oh, good. There's something on the back of this one. Good. work. Work is a very difficult one. Again, it can be a sort of four-letter word, can't it? Try to shift to a position where your work is right livelihood. In the fullest sense. I mean, there's all sorts of things I could say about this. I don't really need to. Banti's full of it. There's a load about right livelihood in here. It's in a lot of his other books. You just have to go out and read it, yeah? And read it again and again. Right livelihood in the fullest sense, which is contributing to the creation of the movement in the world, even if it's only passing on the movement's values, because they're your values, yeah? Even that is the beginning of something, yeah? You may have, you know, if you've got those sort of, if you've got the right values, you can have a positive effect on the other people in your workplace. What's his name? I won't embarrass him, but one of the members of my group was saying he found himself getting all his workers together and then giving them a talk about actions having consequences and karma and rebirth. He didn't mention those words, but out it poured, you know, that was his attitude. And they all went, oh, wow, yeah, that's amazing, kind of thing. It was news to them, but he had a very positive effect on them, yeah? That's the sort of thing you can do. Yeah. So it's useful sometimes to stay in, albeit sort of difficult livelihoods, if you can transmit your values. Yeah. I mean, there are people in the movement who are sort of high level doctors. Yeah. They're consultants. They're having a very strong effect on all the people that they come in contact with in the hospitals that they work in. That's very useful. They can add insights to people's lives, just simple ones, without mentioning, you know, Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and all the rest of it. They've got an angle on things. We've got an angle on things that can help ordinary people. Yeah, it will seem like a revelation to them. In a way, it's quite simple. I mean, it's interesting here at Padmaloka, some years ago, Surna joined. He joined the local sort of was it the parish council, something like that. And he went to his first meeting, and they were all arguing with each other. He said, "Look, stop! This is we're wasting time. You know, we've got issues to talk about, and we're fighting amongst ourselves. Why don't we cooperate?" And they all went, "Oh yeah, oh that's amazing. You're incredible, kind of." You know, a very simple truth. But it transformed things. You know, he helped those people work constructively together. And he didn't mention anything about, you know, being a Buddhist. In a way, it's quite simple. We need order members. Even Mitras have asked for ordination, doing all sorts of things, yeah, because they can inject a sort of an insightful perspective into the lives of other people. Even if it's only doing nothing at all, except being positive. Bhante goes into this. Somewhere, I think it's in here actually. Even if you're just being positive and not doing any other work at all, that's going to have an effect on the people around you. And I don't think I need to mention that Bhante is as keen as ever he was on creating a new society. We don't talk about that much anymore. It's sort of gone out of fashion a bit. But he's saying, well, what about it? You know, I thought this is the ideal. You know, this is what we should be working towards. So find out what the new society is. And start to help trying to create it. Yeah. As an order member, you incur duties. Yeah. Again, duty. It's another four-letter word. Bhante says, duty rhymes with beauty. So he obviously gives it quite a high value. Now, what did I do with rights and duties? Yes, it's back here. I've taken the liberty of sort of doing a sort of précis of Bhante's little piece. Originally it was in Crossing the Stream, but it's also in the Essential Sangharakshita, page 610. Yeah, the full essay on rights and duties. But it's a very simple thing, but it's extremely important. He says there are two ends to a walking stick. It's important to grab the right end. And rights and duties are like that. Duties consist in what is due from us to others and are based upon giving. Rights consist in what is due from others to us and is based from a subjective point of view upon grasping and getting. The performance of one's duty does not mean merely the grudging recognition and half-hearted rendering of what is legally or even morally due to one's family or friends, spiritual friends, other mitras have asked for ordination, order members, you know, your local centre council. I mean, I've added all these. He didn't put these in. Social or national group, he says, political party or religious organisation. It doesn't consist in a half-hearted or legally or even morally moral responsibility to all that, but in the unobstructed outward flow of one's love and compassion over the whole world. That's what one's duty is, yeah? He says, the conscientious performance of one's duties results in the gradual loosening of the bonds of selfishness and egotism. The performance of one's duties results in the establishment of love and peace. The attempt to extort the attempted extortion of one's rights in the outbreak of hatred and violence. Duties unite, rights divide. Duties are cooperative, rights competitive. But, he says, some will protest, if we simply perform our duties without demanding our rights in return, we shall be taken advantage of and exploited by unscrupulous politicians, crooked capitalists, order members, ordination team members, this is my additions again, public and private preceptors, you know, members of centre councils. We shall be abused and trampled upon by people on every side. This objection would be valid only if the performance of duty was envisaged as something which applied not to all sections of society, but to some only. But since the two ends of human relationship are inseparable, as the two ends of a stick, and since our rights become duties when looked at from the other end, and no one will consider himself to be without rights, the performance of duties is an obligation which rests equally upon the shoulders of all men and from which none can escape. The remedy for any injustice or inequality in human relationships, whether domestic, social, civil, political, cultural, racial or religious, is not the insistence upon the rights of one party, but on the duties of the other. The reminder of their duties appeals to all that is best and noblest in men and nations, to their innate selflessness and love. It's constructive and positive and results in cooperation, harmony and peace. He goes on about the other side of that, but I won't bother with that. I'll come back to that bit. Anything more about duties? Padmavajra gave us a set of duties, didn't he? Which I would underline. Yeah, strive to transcend yourself, roughly. Resonate with, harmonise with, cooperate with others who go for refuge. Respond to them. Develop sympathy, empathy with all living beings. There's another set. I don't know where I got this from. I couldn't find the reference. But it's an interesting set. The primary duty of an order member is to deepen going for refuge. So imprint that on the inside of your brain, yeah? Upper and lower, yeah? So both, you don't chop yourself in half, yeah? Primary duty of an order member is to deepen going for refuge. Then, keeping contact with your preceptor or preceptors and with Bante, particularly bear in mind Bante. Maybe I'll come back to Bante if I've got the time, yeah? Secondly, because so that was number one, keeping the other bit, primary duty, deepening your going for refuge, sort of includes all four. Number one, keep in contact with your preceptors, Bante. Two, develop an altruistic attitude. Facilitate going for refuge in others. Again, that's another way of looking at what it is we're trying to do, yeah? Subhuti says that perhaps this is our primary duty as well, yeah? To help those who want to go for refuge. Those who want to go for refuge. I mean, there's a lot of things I could say here. We can waste a lot of time helping people who are in trouble or, you know, functioning inefficiently and all the rest of it. Bante's often said that it's the strong who need help, not the weak. There are lots of people helping the weak. It appeals to what is sentimental in us, but the strong need help. Yeah, they need encouragement. They need brotherhood so that they can do even more. Yeah, the strong people will have a bigger effect in the long run than lots of weaker people, I'm afraid to say. Third duty: regular meditation practice, particularly sadhana. I'm not going to say anything about that. It's all in the two sets of 15 points here. There's lots that can be said about meditation and sadhana. Four, stay in communication with other order members, no matter what. Yeah, no matter what happens, stay in communication with other order members. Don't be the one to cut off. Yeah, always keep the door open. Always keep the door open. Maintain the harmony of your chapter, of the order, and maintain the harmony of the movement, and be active in that, yeah? And I think maybe this was Subhuti, but at the end it says, you're not obliged to do anything for anyone else beyond these, yeah? That's all you have to do. Did I read that one? I read that one. Just a little bit about Bante. I often say this in talks. I think Bante is a great man, yeah? He's not famous. In fact, in some circles, he's quite infamous. But I think he is a great man. And he's having a tremendous effect on an awful lot of people. He saved me from East London working class mediocrity. Yeah, he sort of plucked me out of that through the order members that I met. Yeah, telling me what he'd said. I think that's amazing. I think it's incredible. Really, all the things that you need to do in your life as an order member are all there. They're all there even in this book, I suspect. I mean, I haven't read it cover to cover. But if you read Banty, you will find out what it is you need to do, what it is you ought to do, if you're really going to consider this as a spiritual life in the full sense of the term, as he defined it earlier. There was something else I wanted to say about Banty. And all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I hear older members sometimes saying things, and I thought, well, that's not what Banty says. Have you read Banty? And they say, oh, yeah, I read that, years ago. You have to keep reading Banty. You have to read him again and again and again. I think Banty's like a sort of really intricate piece of classical music. There are layers and shades to his teachings. And if one reading will not exhaust the possibilities in most of Banty's teachings, they have to be gone into again and again and again. I guarantee you, if you keep reading the same things from Banty, even if you just pick a few things from this Essential Sangharakshita and you read them every couple of months, new things will come out at you. I mean, I've proved this to myself through being at Padmaloka for 20 years. Yeah, we do these six themes over and over. And it would be tempting to think, oh, it's boring, I mean, I've done the survey of Buddhism, something like 28 times, yeah? And it would be easy to think, oh, what a bore, all that same old stuff. Every time I go through that text, something new comes out. If I'm changing, that's inevitable, isn't it? If my wisdom and sort of understanding is growing, then each time I read it, there is going to be something new out of it. So if you read Banty twice and nothing comes out, you're stuck. Yeah, there's something else wrong with your spiritual life. So keep reading Banty. Gosh. Everything that an order member does could, in principle, be an expression of going for refuge. But beware, as I said, this shorthand of GFR. Yeah. It's going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. You're trying to create Sangha, yeah? You're trying to sort of help to contribute towards, bringing the bodhicitta into being. That's going to take a lot of effort. But the rewards are fantastic, yeah? They're amazing. I'll leave you with one, if I can find the thing, a parting shot from my friend Arloka, which is what an order member does, summed up in just four lines. Is it somewhere? Oh, there it is. Yeah, good. It does need some qualifying, but don't worry about that. Stay in a positive frame of mind and it will sort itself out. Yeah. Last word from Arloka, 1998. Look after each other. Study the Dharma. Think for yourselves and don't fit in.